Welcome back. My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
My pleasure. Good to be with you again, Jim.
Joseph, 2 weeks ago you presented at the World Outlook Financial Conference in Vancouver. You had a special offer for our attendees. Can you extend that special offer to our listeners?
I'd be very happy to do that. The World Outlook Financial Conference was another great success, 1,000 people there. And, you know, there was people there covering mining, covering energy, covering other areas, and technology, et cetera. And, you know, I did the keynote energy speech. We had 11 energy companies speaking, of which nine I cover, and nine of them are on our recommended buy list. So we made an offer there for people who were at the there, and we're leaving it open now with you until the end of February, and that is that people can get the annual. So they can go to www.schachterenergyreport.ca, and they can go to subscriptions, and the annual is $100 off, so instead of $9.99, it's $8.99. And the quarterly, which was $299, is $50 off, $249. And the codes for that are that they can go to get them would be WOFCA for the annual, 25, and for the quarterly, WOFCQ25 for the quarterly one. And you have all that information, and you can include it in your release of the interview today.
For some reason, several politicians in Canada seem to be fine with fentanyl and migrants crossing the border into the U.S. If President Trump institutes tariffs against Canada, is this likely to affect the crude oil and natural gas markets in Canada?
Well, number one, if the politicians seem to be fine with it, maybe those are the ones that should be arrested and deported and lose their Canadian citizenship, because anything like that, I think, is stupid. And, you know, wanting fentanyl to come in to kill your children, I think that should be considered a federal crime and deportation, even if you've been a longstanding citizen. So I'm hard on that one. On the migrants issue and the issue of, you know, how does that impact energy, the tariffs, you know, we're going to probably see tariffs. If it's 10%, you know, as I mentioned at the conference, between the Canadian dollar, right now the Canadian dollar has moved up, you know, I think it's, what, 70.5 cents now. We were 68 cents. So if there's a little movement on the Canadian dollar, if we go back down to 68 cents and maybe even to go a little bit lower, and at the same time we have differentials widen, which means heavy oil differentials now are around $15 because the quality of the crude is not as good as light, so it trades at a discount because it also costs more to produce, more to transport because you need diluent. So we could see the spread widen a little bit, $16, $18. So effectively, the tariffs will have minimal impact on the energy sector. I think the tariffs where we're really worried about is on forest products, steel industry, and, of course, for Quebec, it's an important industry, the aluminum one, as well as forest products, so and mining. So we'll have to wait and see how this all goes down. You know, Trump likes to needle Canada, the Canadian government with 51st state. Of course, most Canadians think that there's not a hope in hell of that happening, and wanting it, even if there was a national referendum. And so I think that, you know, what we're looking at is early March, early April, when Trump pulls out all of his next, you know, rounds. You know, he's got his people in the Commerce Department looking at every asset class, every product area, and looking at, VAT taxes, tariffs, you know, and then non-tariff items where, you know, you say you can't bring it in unless it's a certain size. And, of course, America may not make that size, so you can't bring it in. So, and there's some real tariffs that are rational ones. You know, you can't bring a big, Ford F-350 down the streets in many cities in Europe because the narrowness of the roadways. So there are tariffs that you can't really charge against, but those are lifestyle things that stop America from exporting the biggest of the biggest of their trucks.
From an energy standpoint, do you think there are benefits to Canada becoming the 51st state?
I think the more concerning problem is if for some unfortunate reason the Liberals get reelected in Ottawa and the lies they're telling everybody about, swinging around lower government, we're not going to have a carbon tax, from both of them, both Chrystia Freeland and from, Carney, I think they're both doing a 180 here. And again, like all politicians, once you get in office, you do what you want. And, if they get a majority again, or they get a minority, working minority, with the NDP kissing their ass, you may want to bleep that one. The reality is, I don't think there's any benefits to be part of the 51st state. But if there were a Liberal government in Eastern Canada that was detrimental to Western Canada's interests, i.e. energy and agriculture, etc., I think, everybody worried for years about Quebec separation votes. I would say that there's a high probability that if the Liberals get back in, which I think is a low probability, but if they did get back in and they did do the stupid things against the West, I would bet you that there would be a referendum in Western Canada, Saskatchewan, Alberta, the most likely, where they would vote to separate, and then who knows if they become the 51st state. But I would put that as a very low probability event, because I'm hopeful there is a change in Ottawa with a more rational, more sensible pro-business with the Conservatives.
Good goings on in the Middle East and with OPEC drive crude oil prices higher.
Yeah, there's some issues there. Right now Trump is not really taking a 2x4 to Iran. They're trying to get the Hamas out of Gaza, which I think is not going to be easy. They're still waiting for more of the, they just released today some of the dead bodies of a family, four bodies. They're supposed to release more people on Saturday. If the release of the people continues, then you could see, a quieter period there. And I think that would drive prices lower because people would be saying that, look, there's adequate supplies right now. America's going to have the drill, baby, drill, mental mentality from Trump, but the industry is going to do rational things. They're not going to grow production unless it makes sense. And then you're going to see OPEC have the ability to bring back a little bit of production. So I don't think you're going to see, massive higher prices, $100, $120, unless there was a war between Israel and Iran. The other wild card, of course, is Venezuela. The Americans are not happy with Maduro. They could, stop them from selling oil. They could blockade the country. Americans did blockade Cuba in the past, and that could remove some supply. So if Iran is removed from supply in Venezuela, you could remove 2 to 3 million barrels. That would drive prices up. On the other hand, if there's no issue with these two countries or diplomacy is allowed to work, and OPEC, brings on production as prices rise, as demand rises, we'll probably see, and this is my forecast, is that we will, be in a range in Q1 between 68 and maybe, $79, but each quarter thereafter moving up, and in Q4 of 2025, I see prices over 90, and if you plug that in on an annualized basis for most companies in the sector, they're tremendous bargains, and we think there's a lot of stocks that we cover on our buy list and that we cover on our research that could go up 50% this year. So after 2 years of a flat line for the sector, we had the good years of 2020 to 2022, and then we flatlined thereafter I think that 2025 is going to be a takeoff year, and then it'll be a leading to many years of very positive performance, because as the world economies, change around from globalization, that's going to cause more demand. We're going to need, production in other countries, not just China, and that's going to cause incremental energy demand. And also China will move more to a consumer economy, which will increase demand in that country. The export world that they've been focused on for the last, few decades, since, let's say, 1999, for 25, 26 years, they're going to have to focus now on building a consumer economy. Remember, two-thirds of the U.S. and Canadian economies are consumer-related. I would think it's less than 30% in China. So that change can mean a meaningful impact on domestic consumption.
There are thoughts that with Doge and Elon Musk uncovering so much waste and fraud that inflation in the U.S. could head towards zero in 2026. In theory, could this be good or bad for the prices for crude and natural gas?
Well, the problem I have is that, you have Doge, which is going to, gut out maybe $100 billion or $200 billion of government spending. But remember, they're on a $2 trillion deficit. So going from a $2 trillion to $1.8 doesn't really do much. And that just takes the debt from, $37 trillion to $39 trillion. So it sounds good. And it's heading in the right direction, but it's not meaningful enough. You've got to start to see that deficit swing to a surplus, I don't see right now anything that's going on in the States where that can happen. So I don't think that's the issue. I think if you look at tariffs, though, that could raise the prices of goods in Canada. And so transporting that and others will have to be finding new markets. So the question is, are we going to be able to have more east-west traffic, east to Europe, west to Asia, and will that increase the demand for energy? If it does, that would raise the price for energy. But a lot of those logistics changes where we change our supply chains take a lot of time. So it's not something that I would expect would be a major factor in 2025.
President Trump's implementing tariffs on steel worldwide. Many mills in Canada and Mexico get steel from China and create products that are shipped to the U.S. Previously, President Trump focused on the poor quality of the steel from China. When poor quality steel is used in infrastructure, buildings, airplanes, military equipment, cars, it's concerning. Do you think Canada should build its own steel industry to produce high-quality steel?
Well, we do have Nucor and others where you scrap steel to make steel. And again, the quality, depending upon what you put into a titanium or whatever, what do you make for the consumer, be it the auto industry, Boeing in the airline industry or whatever, other industries, rail, whatever, you're going to need good quality steel. So China has been dumping, different, lower quality products around the world, but into Canada they've been shipping product that then gets, rolled product that gets it manufactured into things here, reheated and then, stamped and made into the products that the auto industry needs, etc. So I'm not sure it's poor quality anymore. I just think it's being dumped because they want to keep their steel industry working at high levels of utilization, which means they can charge less. And, of course, they then sell it around the world and do it at prices below what the local domestic manufacturers can do it. And that's what's caused a lot of the steel industry companies around the world to shut down because of the unfair trade practices of dumping product on countries below the cost of their production. And that's what Trump's mad about. And that's, and Canada and Mexico are taking advantage of that cheap steel and then selling into the United States products that are needed. So Trump has an argument here. The question is, how do we find a solution around it?
Prime Minister Trudeau just announced the building of a $40 billion high-speed rail line between Toronto and Quebec City. Would it have been better to put that money into a pipeline from west to east?
Oh, my God, of course you'd want that. And you'd like to have, you know, let's just say a corridor from western Canada, you know, from B.C. all the way, which would be internet, which would be rail, which would be, you know, pipelines, which would be all kinds of, you know, carbon capture, infrastructure, everything. You know, he's throwing around all kinds of stupid things as he leaves office, just to make it more difficult for his successors. There's no logical reason that they're going to, with the $45 billion, that they can get enough ridership to justify it. You know, we've talked for a long time about a railroad between Edmonton and Calgary. Won't happen in my lifetime. You hear about a railroad between Edmonton and Banff. I don't buy that either. The cost and utilization cannot justify it economically. So I think that this is just another one of Trudeau's sunny, optimistic views of what can be done, but no rational about the cost of it and the fact that Canada cannot afford something like that with the size of our deficits, with the fact that we're not spending the money on defense that we're supposed to, the fact that we still haven't bought the submarines. Oh, we're going to buy nukes. Now we're going to buy others. Now we're going to open up the bidding. Maybe we'll buy them by 2030. Maybe we'll have them by 2050. You know, all of this garbage. And to me, the priorities of the Prime Minister to say, I need a railway, is just insanity.
Could we see higher interest rates in Canada to support the Canadian dollar?
I think the Bank of Canada is not going to care about that. I think the issue is going to be the election. If we end up, with a conservative, with a majority, a decent majority, that will strengthen the Canadian dollar because it'll be a pro-business environment. Just like you look at the rally the U.S. dollar had when Trump won, massive, 8% rally in the U.S. dollar. Could the Canadian dollar go from that 68 low to 74.75, especially if we have $90 WTI? I can make a case for $80 WTI next year, or $80 Canadian dollar next year with a conservative government and $90-$95 WTI. I can also make a case for 60 cent dollar, and that would be if Trump and, a liberal government, you know, are taking cudgels at each other. The Canadian one will be made of softwood lumber, and the American will be hardwood lumber, and we know the end of that one. So my view would be an issue that potentially has positives if we have a positive swing in the leadership in Ottawa, it could go the other way if it doesn't, which is we sure hope doesn't happen.
Is the underlying Canadian economy slowing, causing less demand for energy?
It's slow. There's a bit of a slowdown, and you're seeing a bit of a slowdown in consumption here. But we're in the winter, which is usually high demand. We usually have a softening that goes in once we get into the shoulder season of spring and then of course fall again then, when that window happens. So we could see a softening seasonally, but if there is concern about tariffs and the Canadian economy softens some more, retail sales get weak, we see housing slow down even more, then it's possible that we could see, more downside.
Gasoline prices across the country have been going up. Vancouver's close to $2 a liter. What's causing that?
Well, there's two issues that, you know, I think we all look at is, you know, the first thing, crude oil has gone back from 68 to, you know, we're looking at, 72.5. So that's part of it. Carbon pricing, the taxes from the government are in there. There's a shortage of refining capacity in Western, in BC. So I was there paying $1.95, when I was there for the World Outlook Conference. So, we're paying $1.52 here in Alberta. So a little bit better. But if we can remove the carbon pricing in the price of oil, and we see a little bit of a pullback in the price of oil. It might get a little cheaper. But on the other hand, if I'm right that the economy gets up, we have a new government in Ottawa that's pro-business, common sense, focused, then if the price of oil goes to 90, then, you know, the question is what happens to the provincial and federal taxes that are in there? Will they remove them? If they don't, then we're probably looking at prices even higher than today going into 2026.
The U.S. dollar's been pulling back. Is this causing energy prices to rise?
You know, you've seen a little bit of a pullback, maybe 2% in the U.S. dollar. I think the reason we saw the price of oil go up is there was a pipeline from Kazakhstan, or a refinery, sorry, in Kazakhstan, that was hit by Ukrainian drones because because of the Russians, and that removed some supply, and of course we're seeing tit for tat where Russia is bombing Ukrainian facilities for energy and vice versa, so that caused a bit of a bounce here, and I think that the issue of what happens with Iran, everybody was for a while was worried that Trump was going to take a 2x4 and they would lose production, which would then mean higher prices. But I saw a report this morning that Iran was selling a record amount of oil to China, so we are seeing Iran in the marketplace taking demand from other people.
Nowadays, when we think of rigs, we think of elections, but when it comes to crude and natural gas, rig counts are important. What's the latest on the rig counts?
Well, the rig count for this week comes out tomorrow, but last week's rig count I have in front of me. The Canadian rig count is down 4.7% from a year ago, 245 active rigs, down 4 on the week. Natural gas, though, is where the problem is because of the low prices. We're about 270 right now. The U.S. price today was 415, but we saw almost 450 for NYMEX yesterday because of the very cold weather with the Arctic front polar vortex heading down to Texas. So you had a 21% decline in the Canadian rig count from 90 a year ago to 71. The oil rig count is going up because of the volumes that can go through the TMX. So we had 174 rigs working, drilling for oil, heavy oil drilling and other oil drilling, up from 144 in 2024. So the industry come out of the gate quickly in 2025, drilling for oil to fill that TMX line that goes to the coast, that goes to either the U.S. or Asia to the U.S. still before tariffs, but more and more of that will end up going to Asia if they do install tariffs. So potentially we could see more volumes going west. I do not believe that the economics make sense for oil pipelines to the East Coast or natural gas. What matters is there's a tremendous amount of natural gas resource in Quebec, between Quebec City and Montreal. Questerre, an Alberta-based company, made the major discoveries with others. It's still there. Right now, Quebec is becoming a little more malleable on maybe we need to, develop that resource. And if they are and they're willing to let it be exported to the East Coast, then potentially there could be LNG plants on the East Coast. But the gas that goes in there would be from Quebec and also from maybe the Marcellus in the United States.
Well, right now in Quebec is we not frack Tabanac. On a specific day, can crude oil and natural gas prices be different in different areas of the world?
Oh, yeah, I think that's normal. For example, in natural gas more so than oil. Oil, you have Brent pricing, you have WTI pricing, you have heavy oil pricing, sour. So pricing can change around the world depending upon the market and what they're buying on oil. But on natural gas, because of the cold winter in Europe, we've seen up to $20 U.S. and MCF for pricing in Europe. That's why, companies like Vermilion have been doing quite well selling in that market. And, more companies would love to be selling into it. And in Europe, in Asia, you're getting mid-teens U.S., and that compares to right now maybe 275 Canadian, for AECO Canadian, and that price I mentioned earlier, 415 U.S. for NYMEX. So the Americans can ship LNG to Asia and make a big profit. Hopefully, in the coming months, LNG Canada opens up and we start having our first shipments on a regular basis to Asia, and that could lift the price of Canadian natural gas in the second half of 2025 to a consistent basis over $3 an MCF, which would be very good for the industry. And instead of drilling less, we would possibly be drilling more. But again, cold weather makes all the difference in the world. The massive drawdowns we've seen in the weather for natural gas, have been the thing that really lifted the price over the $4. Just this, the data that came out today was 196 BCF drawdown on the week that was announced, the week ending February 14th, which was announced today, released February 20th. But that's storage is now down 15.5% from a year ago, which is a big decrease. And, we still have, another, let's say, 3-4 weeks of cold weather. And then you have, moderate drawdowns at the end, through mid-end March. And then April 1st is the injection season again. So we're going to see a big drawdown this year, which is good. And it's going to set the stage for a much better natural gas environment, in my opinion, in the second half of this year and then 2026.
Do you think pressure is growing in Canada to have pipelines within Canada from east to west?
I think there's more talk about it, but, it's economics. The cost of these things that we know with TMX and also Coastal GasHave blown way beyond what the original budgets were, and so I don't believe going east is logical. The numbers are just staggering. Going west, I think, is very logical for both oil and natural gas. Could we do another line on TMX? Could you do Northern Gateway again if the numbers make sense? Could we do way more natural gas? I think yes. So I think that the west line, getting access to Asia, especially if Trump puts in a lot of tariffs, the left-wing government in your province are going to move into the center because they're going to realize that the economics of the province now require them, if they want to be a wealthy province, they've got to be looking at markets in Asia because these going south is not going to be as favorable anymore.
It looks like Prime Minister Trudeau is on his way out. During his reign, what has he done for energy in Canada?
Harmful, the whole darn time. Almost every policy he's done, everything he's done with between the different bills, Bill 59, Bill 69, you can't talk about what you're doing in the oil patch, muzzling free speech, everything on the pipelines, everything on carbon. Every damn thing he's done since he came into office has been negative. In some ways, he may have been worse than his dad. Goodbye, good riddance, and we don't give a damn, and we don't want to see you again.
Despite President Trump removing electric vehicle mandates, the electric vehicle market continues to grow. Could this lead to lower crude prices, or would producers just reduce output to keep prices high?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with production. I think production will stay and grow because demand is going to be growing, for other products that we use that use oil as an input. Also, the emerging world that's going to be bringing lithium, copper, cobalt, nickel, all the things we need as inputs of rare earths and others are going to require their countries to use more energy. I see the OECD having less demand at the end of this decade than we do now, but I see non-OECD demand growing by 5-6 million barrels more than the reduction that we see from the OECD. So I think that to me is really the fact that we're going to be seeing more demand. So if we have, let's say, 104 million barrels demand this year, maybe it's 105 and a half next year. I think it could be 108 to 110 at the end of the decade, but we could see the OECD demand come down 2 to 3 million, more than offset by the demand in the emerging world.
Would you buy an electric vehicle?
I think people are finding in cold weather that the range of the vehicles are not up to what they say, the posted. In the southern, United States, warmer markets, maybe Vancouver Island, the lower, Toronto area where you don't get a lot of really cold weather and snow, it makes sense that you can do that. But until, they solve the cold weather issue, we all have range anxiety when you think about buying an EV. But I think at some point it's going to, they're going to break through on the technologies, and it is a possibility. But I think people need to, remember that, the issue with EVs are the, what happens if the battery goes and you have to replace the battery? What about repairs? I think a lot of the things that we think about with electric cars, as we have more and more of them on the road, people are finding that there's some cost issues that they never figured when they originally bought the vehicle. And, of course, you're seeing a lot of people not very happy owning Teslas right now, given some of the comments from Elon Musk. And there's been desecration on a lot of Teslas across Canada. I gather people are buying bumper stickers. I bought this Tesla before Elon went to Washington. So, to hopefully not have somebody damage their vehicle.
Can you tell us again about your special offer and where our listeners can subscribe?
Yeah, my pleasure. Go to www.schachter.ca, and we have two offers, one for an annual, one for a quarterly. So the code for the annual, which would be $100 off from $999 to $899, is WOFCA for annual 25, and the quarterly, which we normally have $299, is $249, up off $50. So that one is WOFCQ25. So again, WOFCA25 for the annual, WOFCQ25 for the quarterly, and you just plug those into the promo code at the check-in, and you'll get the discount. And remember, one of the key things I wanted to mention is we had kind of a 2.5-year kind of no zone where the energy index was flat, the CRB was flat. We've seen gold take off, and a few other commodities do well. I think this year we're going to see the whole commodity board wake up. The CRB's high 2 years ago was 330. We're like 313 now. I think it's going to break through. And I think if I'm right about energy going to 90 in the fourth quarter for WTI and natural gas, $3, I think we have a lot of stocks that could go up 50%. So, if you own any of the Canadian mid-cap or juniors or energy service or royalty trust, we cover them. Just go to the website, and there's some free research you can see of what we do cover, and then just go and subscribe. We're going to have something that people should, if you want to become a subscriber, definitely consider doing it between now and next Thursday. We have our quarterly webinar, which is a 90-minute webinar, which we go over what's going on in the markets, top picks, and then we'd have two Q&As. That starts at 7 p.m. Mountain Time, Calgary, and we do that for 90 minutes, and then it goes into our archives. So people, if they can't listen during the night of Thursday, they can listen on the weekend at their leisure.
Joseph, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
My pleasure as always. Thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from Calgary. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Bob Hoy, Sam Cooper, John Rubino, and Joseph Schachter. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or for our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.